welcome to Behind the Bar Show, and as always, I'm your host with the gimmicky name, Mr. Martini. This week, it's all about brandy. We'll be breaking it down to the different types of brandy before the break, and then we'll get into some recipes after. During our break, we'll have an interesting tidbit of information about disappearing cognac. So get yourself a glass of cognac, sit back, and enjoy the show. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 8. This week we're going to be speaking about brandy, but as always, let's start off with listener feedback. First, I have a correction to make. On last week's tequila episode, I actually said To Kill a Mockingbird was written in 1988. Now, I have no idea where my mind was when I said this. Thanks to Patrick for informing me of my mistake. I never would have realized it on my own, would have completely forgotten all about it. This book from Harper Lee was actually published in 1960, so it definitely couldn't have been written in 1988. So thanks for everyone out there who's helping me keep my facts straight. Also, Alex in Ontario, Canada, asked that I mention his new Frapper map, which is called Drinks a Mini. He's taking a poll of what kind of drinks people like around the world, so you may want to check that out. I also want to give another shout-out to a great vocal fan of my show out there called Ian from Delaware, and to his mother in St. Louis and sister in Minnesota. Ian asked me if I could only have one book behind my home bar to use as a reference, what would it be? Well, I'm sure there are a lot of good books out there that would be probably the best thing to use behind a bar, but now out of what I have in my current collection, I would say one book that I really enjoy looking up recipes when I want to look up recipes instead of actually, you know, going through the whole history is the Williams-Sonoma The Bar Guide. Now, you can get that from either at the store Williams-Sonoma, or you can also find it on the website. So you may want to check that one out. Now also, Rennie from Switzerland sent me an email and mentioned two other variations of the Caipirinha. As you know, the Caipirinha is made with cachaça. But if you use light rum instead of cachaça, it's called a Caipiríssima. And if you use vodka, it's called a Caipiroska. And also I want to thank some special people in New York who asked to stay anonymous, who clicked on my PayPal donation button and donated to the show. I am eternally grateful. Thank you very much. By the way, why aren't you on my Frapper map yet? Just teasing. Now, one thing I won't do is ask for donations on the show. But one thing you may be able to do to help me finance the show would be to click on the advertisers on the top of my blog page. Or even use the Google bar for your searches. Inside the Google search screen that comes up, it'll have advertisements for whatever you're searching for. If you click on these advertisements, it actually will help me at no cost to you. But it can help, you know, kind of just dampen a little bit of the amount of money I've been putting towards this thing. So that's all I want to say about that, because really I don't want to get too much into the whole donation thing. It's just, you know, I'm doing this for fun. So I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and I'm more appreciative of just all the feedback I've been getting from everyone out there. So that's good enough for me. Finally, thanks to everyone who's gone to my blog at behindthebarshow.blogspot.com and left comments, as well as everyone who's gone to the podcast alley and voted for my show. Remember, you can vote monthly. Also, thank you to all who's posted pins in the Frapper map. Now, I just get a complete kick out of seeing where everyone is, and thank you to those who's also posted pictures and put comments. Okay, let me also add, I hope that the sound of this podcast sounds good, because I finally got all my equipment in. So I've hooked up the new microphone, the shock mount, the pop filter, and it definitely sounds much better in my headset, so I'm hoping this is going to come out great. It shouldn't come out with too much static in the background. Of course, since this microphone is so strong, it's probably going to pick up the squeaking of my computer more, but let's see how it comes out. Feel free to email me and tell me what you think about the sound of the show. I've definitely dumped a lot of money into this equipment since I'm definitely getting into the whole thing, and hopefully it sounds great, much better than the tequila episode, which I thought had just way too much static for me. I'd also like to mention that since I live in San Francisco, I happen to find out about all the things that are happening in San Francisco that have to deal with cocktails and alcohols. And currently, I know of the 7th Annual Whiskeys of the World Expo, which is happening here in San Francisco, Friday, March 24th at the Hotel Monaco, from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. for tasting seminars with experts around the world, and on Saturday, March 25th at Pier 3 Embarcadero from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. for the main expo extravaganza. Now, for more information, you can call 888-748-2400 or visit their website at www.celticmalts.com. If you know of anything that's happening in your area that has to deal with any kind of expos or fairs or anything that has to deal with alcohols and cocktails, something that's coming up shortly within a month or so, let me know. Send something to me and I'll throw it on to the next show. Okay, now on for brandy. The word brandy comes from the Dutch word brandewijn. Now, I'm hoping I'm saying this right. It's spelled B-R-A-N-D-E-W-I-J-N. If there's any Dutch out there, feel free to give me a call and tell me how to say this correctly. And I'll also mention that on the next show. But it's a brandewijn, brandewijn, I don't know. But I know it means burnt wine. Now, the reason the Dutch gave it this name was because the wine would be boiled before distilling. This boiling process is what gave it the name burnt wine. The origins of brandy is quite a difficult thing to track. It's thought that it could have started around the 7th or 8th centuries when alchemists were distilling fruits to make medicines. This information spread out of Islam and into Spain and Ireland by the 8th century. And at the basic level, you could split brandy into three groups. Basically, grape brandy, pomace brandy, and fruit brandy. Now, grape brandy is distilled from fermented grapes. This would be then aged in oak casks for coloring and aging. Pomace brandy is made from must, which is the grape pulp, skin, seeds, stems, etc., everything. Anything that's left over after the grapes have been pressed to make wine, all that stuff that's left over is called must, M-U-S-T. And pomace brandy is rarely aged in wood and is quite strong. A great example of pomace brandy is grappa, which is Italian in style, and marc, which is French in style. Now, fruit brandy is basically made of any fruit that isn't grapes. Mostly all fruit brandies are distilled from the fruit wine. And the reason why I say mostly is because berries don't have enough sugar to make enough alcohol for distilling purposes. For this reason, brandy that's made out of berries are actually a macerated mix of berries and a strong base alcohol that is then brought down to a lower proof and then distilled. Now, let me explain real fast what I mean by macerated. During the vodka episode when I went into how you can do the whole infusing flavors into the vodka, making infused vodkas. Well, really what we were doing, in technical terms, we would call macerating the flavors into the vodka, because we're pretty much just putting it in, letting it all soak into the actual vodka. In technical terms, when we're talking about infusing, that would actually deal with heating it with the brandy or with the vodka. Okay, so from this point, we could break down the brandy categories even more. First, we'll keep fruit brandy separate, which I'll speak about again in more detail. And then we'll add some subcategories, cognac, armagnac, American brandy, Spanish brandy, and Greek brandy. Now, really, brandy is made in just about every country. If you know of a region that's currently making wine, you can bet there's someone around there making brandy as well. Now, first, let's talk about the fruit brandy some more. The regulations on fruit brandy are different for every country. Now, in the U.S., fruit brandy must be made with a wine brandy base, be over 70 proof, and contain a specific amount of sugar. Other countries make fruit brandy without any wine at all. The French call their colorless fruit brandy eau de vie, which means our favorite saying, water of life. Now, eau de vie is a brandy made of any fruit other than grape, and is distilled to around 100 proof. It is never aged in barrels, but instead immediately bottled or stored in glass or earthenware containers. Apple has actually broken out on its own, and in America it's called Applejack. It's made from fermented apple cider, which must be aged at least 2 years and may be blended with grain spirits. The French have Calvados, which is distilled from apple cider that's been fermented for at least 1 month until all the sugar is gone. It's then aged as long as 20 to 40 years. Now let's get into cognac. This has to be one of the best types of brandies in the world, in my opinion. Cognac can only be made in the Cognac region of France, which is just north of Bordeaux. The main types of grapes used for cognac are Uni Blanc, Folie Blanche, and Colombard. These types of grapes create a tart, low-alcohol wine that, after being double distilled in pot stills and aged in casks, turn into liquid gold. Cognac start out in new oak barrels to give them color and quickly mellow them out, and then they're moved into used casks where the brandy can age gracefully. Now, by law, cognac must be aged at least 2.5 years, but most are going to be aged a lot longer than that. Now, have you ever noticed those letters on a bottle of cognac like VSOP? Well, if you see a bottle that says VS, then this has been aged a minimum of 2.5 years. VSOP has been aged a minimum of 4.5 years, and XO has been aged at least 6.5 years. Now, the key here is minimum, because most are aged a lot longer than that. You can find a VS that's been aged around 8 years. Many cognacs are a blend, and the producers will always go by the age of the youngest blend. So you could be drinking a cognac that has an age of 10 years, but it may really have some cognac blended in with it that's been aged over 23. It can only get quite confusing to just know that XO is usually more smoother than VSOP, and VSOP is usually smoother than VS. So here are the basic meanings for each letter that you could see. V means very, S means superior, O means old, P equals pale, F equals fine, X means extra, C means cognac, and E means especial. Now, one of the best cognacs I can think of has got to be Louis XIII from Remy Martin. Now, here's a quote from their website. Louis XIII de Remy Martin uses only grapes from the Grand Champagne region, which guarantees its unique, exclusive quality. It is a blend from eau de vie, some more than a century in age. Then it is aged in tircons, barrels, that are several hundred years old, in a cellar set apart for it alone. Now, I think I said eau de vie. I mean like aux de vie. It's E-A-U-X de vie. So it's got that X thrown in there. I want to just mention that because I'm reading this direct quote from their website. So main thing I got to say about Louis XIII is yum. If you ever have the opportunity to try this, try it. It's great. I had the great pleasure of trying it on my last cruise from New York to Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. I paid only $79 for an ounce of this stuff on the ship. In most restaurants in the U.S., you'll pay around $130 for it, but I gotta tell you, this stuff went down like butter. The rich caramel flavors were incredible. There's no sting in the back of the throat. I mean, it just slides right down. It is unbelievable. A bottle of Louis XIII sells for around $1,600 a bottle in the United States. The bottle itself is made out of Baccarat crystal. This is not your everyday sipping cognac. It's definitely for special occasions. On a side note, I'm going on a cruise in May, and all I can think about is the opportunity to purchase a bottle of Louis XIII. It's always cheaper on a cruise because of duty-free and tax-free prices. I remember they were selling it on the cruise that I took to Canada. They were selling it for around $600, and I'm still kicking myself for not buying a bottle. All right, so let's move on to Armagnac. Armagnac is distilled mainly in Gascony, or the Armagnac region, which is the southwest corner of France. It's a lot like cognac, but has more of a pungent taste. Armagnac is distilled once in a copper still, and then it's aged in black oak. This gives it a lot of tannins and a darker color. Armagnac uses the same quality designations as cognac does, so you'll also see the VSOP and VS, and those letters. The region known as Armagnac has three areas. Boss Armagnac, which is considered to create the best quality. Then there's Ten Aries and Haut Armagnac. A bottle of Armagnac, which tells you the region, which doesn't tell you the region it came from, is then a blend of two or three, or all three of those regions. Now, American brandies started during the late 18th and 19th centuries with the Spanish missions. American brandy is mainly made in California and has a fruitier, somewhat lighter flavor than European brandies. This makes it great for mixed drinks. This type of brandy must be aged at least 2 years in wood barrels, usually American oak. Now, American brandy does not use the quality designation like VSOP and VS and XO as Armagnac and Cognac do. Spanish brandy is rich, dark, and sweet, and is produced mainly in Jerez and Valdepeñas. Spanish brandy is made out of Spanish wines or sherry. Now, Spanish brandy goes through a special aging process just like sherry does. This process is called the Solera system. In general, this means there are a series of casks holding the brandy, each older than the cask before it. Now, when brandy is removed from the last cask, it is replaced with brandy from the cask before it. Now, no more than one-third of a cask is removed, and each level is then filled with the next cask down until you end up with an extra space in the young brandy casks. These are topped off with new brandy that's ready for aging. So I hope this makes sense. It's kind of difficult to explain how it all works. If you want to know more about it, just do a search for Solera system, S-O-L-E-R-A, Solera system, and you can find more information. Just Google it. Now, the Latin American brandies are quite good as well. In Mexico, brandy is made from a mix of different grapes and are distilled in either column or pot stills. South American brandies are generally double distilled in pot stills and have a lovely fragrance that is great for mixed drinks. The best known type is Pisco, which is a clear brandy from Peru in Chile and is made from muscat grapes. Pisco is used for the recipe Pisco Sour. Now, Greek brandy is distilled in Cyprus and Piraeus, which gives it a distinctive sweet and caramel type flavor. There's also German brandies, I don't think I mentioned before in the subcategories. German monks were making brandy as early as the 14th century. German brandy is normally made from imported wine instead of using their own local wines, which is more valuable to them. Most German brandies are distilled in pot stills and aged around 6 months in oak. If it's been aged any longer than that, then it's called a Uralt, which means older. I think that's about it for the first half of the show. Let's get into our break, and when we come back, we'll go through how to enjoy a nice cognac, followed by brandy recipes. Every year, nearly 20 million bottles of cognac disappear from the barrels during aging due to evaporation. This is known as the Angel's Share. And welcome back to the show. So, have you seen some restaurants where someone orders a cognac and they receive it in a traditional snifter glass? that's tipped on over to one side, and it's on a holder that's holding it above a candle to heat it. Now, I personally cannot stand this practice. This gives way too much heat, which releases the alcohol vapors, and it completely just stings your nose. How can you smell the great aroma while your nose is stinging? I think it covers up a lot of the flavor as well. Basically, a good cognac should be served in a snifter glass, which is it's like a small bowl with a short stemmed base that you can slip the base between your fingers and cup the bowl with your hand. The heat of your hand is enough to help release the nice aromas. To enjoy the aroma of a glass of cognac, give it a nice gentle swirl to let air come in contact with the cognac and release its aromas. Now, lightly just blow into the glass to kind of quickly clear out some of the alcohol vapors that may be in there, and bring it to your nose. Put your nose down into the snifter with your mouth on the outside of the rim of the glass, and tip the glass and breathe in naturally, not forcefully, and make sure you breathe through both your nose and your mouth. Breathing through your mouth at the same time will help you catch the subtle aromas without having all the alcohol vapors shoot up your nose and overpower your senses. The whole reason a snifter is bowl-shaped and only filled to about 20% of the glass is to leave enough room for the air to come in contact with the cognac and to hold more of the cognac's bouquet. Give me a good cognac and I can probably enjoy sitting there smelling it just as much as I do tasting it. Now here's a neat trick. Lightly swirl the cognac and let it just cause a nice thin film of liquid build up on the side of the glass. Slowly it'll start to form lines of cognac on the side, which are called legs. The longer it takes the legs to form, the older the cognac. Now let's get into brandy recipes. First, I'll mention the Jack Rose, since I did mention that the Jack Rose earlier when we were talking about the apple brandies. In a shaker filled with ice, pour in 2 ounces of apple brandy, like Applejack or Calvados, 1 ounce lemon juice, and 1/2 ounce of grenadine syrup. Shake and strain into a chilled cocktail glass. Now I mentioned the Pisco Sour earlier as well, so let me give you a traditional recipe. In a shaker filled 3/4 with ice, pour in 1 1/2 ounce of Pisco brandy, 3/4 ounce fresh lemon juice, 1 ounce simple syrup, and 1 small egg white. Yes, this drink uses egg whites. If you are concerned about salmonella poisoning, then I recommend purchasing a carton of pasteurized egg whites. On a side note, I know of a few drinks using egg whites that are really good. The egg whites give it a frothy, satiny texture to it. Maybe I'll do an episode one of these days on all kinds of drinks that use egg whites. Okay, shake the whole thing very well for at least 10 seconds so the egg whites become completely emulsified. Strain this into a chilled cocktail glass and put a few drops of Angostura bitters on top in a circular pattern. Use a toothpick, drag it through the droplets to make a swirling pattern on top. Now I must mention one of my favorite classic drinks is the sidecar. In a shaker filled with ice, pour in 2 ounces brandy, 1/2 ounce Cointreau, and 1 ounce lemon juice. Shake and strain into a chilled cocktail glass. Now you can use triple sec instead of Cointreau, since triple sec is definitely cheaper, but expect a cheaper tasting drink. Also, I like to rim the cocktail glass with sugar. Just for fun, I once decided to rim the cocktail glass with a mixture of fine sugar and cinnamon powder. Oh my goodness, I found that the flavors of the cinnamon mixed very well with the brandy, and it was completely incredible. So, try it. Now here's another great drink, Between the Sheets. In a shaker filled with ice, pour in 1 ounce brandy, 1 ounce light rum, 1 ounce Cointreau, and 1 ounce fresh lemon juice. Shake and strain into a chilled cocktail glass. Now notice how each ingredient is exactly 1 ounce. The way a bartender would explain this recipe is in parts instead of in ounces. If you think of these ingredients as one part each. Then, if you wanted to make a double, you know to do 2 ounces each. In other words, if the recipe has two parts this, one part that, and half a part of something else, then you can easily make it larger or smaller by changing the size of the parts. This is also very helpful when dealing with when you're speaking to someone from another country that uses a different measuring, they measure differently. They may use centiliters instead of ounces. In this part, when you talk about parts, it's completely understandable between each party. Next is the Brandy Alexander, known as a great before bedtime drink. In a shaker, put in 1.5 ounce brandy, 1 ounce dark creme de cacao, and 1 ounce cream. Now fill the shaker with ice. I put the ice in last because I'm not crazy about pouring cream over ice. It gets that flaky look to it. Shake well and strain into a chilled cocktail glass. Garnish with freshly grated nutmeg. Finally, I'll mention the Stinger, since it is a classic cocktail. Like I mentioned with the Tequila Mockingbird in the last week's show, I'm not crazy about creme de menthe, so I'm not crazy about this drink either, but here it is. In a mixing glass, fill half with ice, pour in 2 ounce brandy, and 1/2 ounce white creme de menthe. Stir well, then strain into a chilled cocktail glass. Well, I think that's about it for brandy episode. Now I have no idea what I'm going to do next week. I have some ideas of what the next show may be. Actually, I've had quite a few people ask me about absinthe, so I may do it on that. Otherwise, it's going to have to be a surprise. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email me at behindthebarshow@gmail.com or leave a voice letter at 206-9-THE-BAR. That's 206-984-3227. Cheers, drink responsibly, and never drink and drive.